Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
My mum would never say, "You're not wearing that, it's too sexy." She'd go, "Yeah, you look great. Here, borrow my leather PVC capsuit or whatever." You know,
You're listening to Feminists Don't Wear Pink, the podcast, based on the book Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, a collection of writing by 52 women on what feminism means to them. I'm Scarlett Curtis. I'm a writer, activist, journalist, and very, very proud feminist. I'm also the curator of this book and the presenter of the podcast. During this series, I'm going to be talking to a few of the amazing contributors who've written our book to find out how they found their feminism and some of the lies that they've been told about what it means to be a woman. My guest today is actress Gemma Arterton. Gemma made her film debut in St. Trinian's, which happens to be one of my favourite films of all time. And over the past decade, she's grown into one of Britain's greatest and most interesting young actresses. Her filmography ranges from James Bond to Their Finest, and this year she stars as Vita Sackville-West in the highly anticipated Vita and Virginia. For the past year, Gemma's been one of the leading voices in the UK Time's Up movement, fighting against sexual harassment and advocating for equality for women in the film industry. Earlier this year, she produced an amazing short film titled Leading Lady Parts, which addresses issues of gender inequality in a hilarious and perceptive way. She's an amazing force for good, and I loved talking to her.
So, Gemma Arterton, are you a feminist?
Of course I am. Of course I'm a feminist.
Amazing. And when did you realise you were a feminist?
I think I didn't really know what a feminist was until probably about 8 years ago.
Wow.
But I was always a feminist. I remember, well, basically I was raised by my mum and my aunt, who are, when my aunt particularly is a proper feminist and, you know, socialised with feminists and would consider herself a feminist. But so we were raised with this kind of, in this way of being. But I didn't really know about the movement, or, you know, I wouldn't have had anyone as a kid saying, "Oh, that's not very feminist," or, you know, I didn't, it wasn't until I was sort of a young woman that I started to, and I was working actually, that I started to question things, ways I was being treated in comparison to my, you know, to my male, you know, counterparts, that I started thinking, in a minute, there's some injustices here.
Did your mum talk to you about feminism growing up?
She didn't, because my mum is, she just raised us to be, it's my sister and me and my mum living in a house together, so we didn't have boys around, so we didn't feel different. And then we went to an all-girls school, and again, we just sort of, we were raised to be silly, run around, do whatever we wanted, wear whatever we wanted. You could be my mum would never say, "You're not wearing that, it's too sexy." She'd go, "Yeah, you look great. Here, borrow my leather PVC capsuit or whatever." You know, but she didn't. Basically, all I'm saying is that when we were growing up, we were not made to feel other.
Yeah.
Like less than or more than. We were just made to feel like part of.
You were, but it was. I sometimes, because I was raised in a really similar way. My mum never talked to me about feminism, but she's so strong, and it was always like a part. I don't know. I've got three brothers, and it was never any different. And I sometimes think, my mum actually always tells me, "Dress more sexy." I was topless on a beach in Ibiza for the first time ever. It was this huge deal. She was like, "Why did you not dress like this more? Like, you're always wearing huge jumpers. Like, you're so annoying." It's like, you're not meant to say that. But then I sometimes think when you've been raised like that, it's almost more of a shock when you get out into the world or things start. When I was kind of a teenager, things started happening to me that I now realise only happened because I was a teenager and I was a girl. And it's almost more of a shock because you've been raised in this amazing way.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, it wasn't, even when I was going through sort of 18, 19, 20, while I was at, you know, drama school and doing all of that, I still didn't feel the inequality until I went into the real world, until I was out there in the real world with adults that are working. And that's when I went, "Oh my God, people are treated so differently." Because, you know, my mum would never treat anyone differently, and we were raised that way. So, yeah, it was a bit more of a shock.
Did you always know you wanted to be an actress?
Absolutely not.
Really?
No. I did it as a hobby from the age of, like, 12, just to kind of do something, really, and socialise. And then at 16, someone said, "Oh, you should, like, do this, you know, as a profession." And I just didn't know that you could get paid for doing, you know, we weren't raised watching films. We would go to the theatre sometimes, but it was just not an option.
Yeah.
So I always felt like it was just this sort of silly thing which I was going into, and that really one day I'd have to choose
a real job.
Yeah. I still feel like that. I'm like, one day I'll have to have a proper job.
One day it's going to happen. almost makes this more interesting, because I feel like always the parts you played from the very beginning of your career are these really kind of strong women. And, you know, even like St. Trinian's, I almost feel was like the beginning of this new feminist. Like for me and my friends, that was such a huge deal. And Tessa the D'Urbervilles, and you've always played these incredible strong women. Was that an active decision, or did you seek out those parts, or how do you think that's ended up happening?
It was not an active decision in any sense. I was grateful to get any job and any part. And I think you go up for so many things when you're first out of drama school. And I went up for St. Trinian's, was my first proper job, I guess. And that came about because the casting director saw me in a play at drama school, and I think she thought that I was kind of like tough or something. But I was also simultaneously going up for auditions at the time where I would literally have an audition for a part where a woman has a sex scene, and that's that. You know, so thank God I didn't get those parts. But it's, I think as obviously now, as I've gotten older, I really am very careful about the parts that I choose, and I think, what are the repercussions? But when I was younger, I was, you know, especially with the things like, you know, the Bond film, and I was just grateful to get the job, to be honest with you. And I didn't really think too hard about it. It's interesting you say that, you've always had these strong characters, because I sort of feel like I get so much, every interview I ever ever asks me about, "Why did you do this film? Why did you do this film? It's such a bad example." Or "Why did you use St. Trinian's?" I think, well, St. Trinian's is like, they wear suspenders and stockings, right? Apart from that, they're all doing.
Women should be allowed to wear suspenders and stockings.
Precisely.
And also, like, Rob Banks or Art or whatever they're doing in the film.
Yeah, and that film is about working with your sisters.
Yeah, and supporting other women.
Supporting each other.
It's so amazing. And I was at a really kind of cliquey all-girls school, and I remember, and it came out, and we were just, it was huge, and the idea of, like, all the groups coming together and supporting each other and working together and all the heads of the different group was major. I think it's a feminist masterpiece, actually. And my 16-year-old brother just went to Edinburgh with his school with the Maiden Dagenham musical.
Did he?
Yeah, and it was so cute. And I went to see it with my mum, and afterwards my mum was sobbing and was like, it's about you, it's about feminism. And I was like, it's very sweet. But they were amazing.
Oh, that's brilliant. Who did he play?
He was actually in the, like, band at the
back. Oh, cool. Yeah, okay, cool.
But he came to me and he was like, I do actually think you're going to like it because it's really feminist, actually.
Of course.
It's got a really good message. So I'm glad it's taken you, like, 3 months to realise what you're actually doing. That also leads us quite nicely into your piece of the book. Do you want to tell us a bit about your piece in the book?
So my... When you guys asked me to write a piece, I completely freaked out because I don't consider myself a writer. And I was thinking about, okay, what's my feminist journey? And I've had lots of feminist journeys, but one that sort of defines me is this sort of journey from being a Bond girl, which is not necessarily regarded as a feminist sort of
position,
to becoming a kind of a... almost like a spokesperson for equal rights and equal pay and feminist issues, and grappling with that and going on that journey. And so I decided to write a piece about what would happen post Me Too, post Harvey Weinstein, with the things that we've learned, if my Bond girl, what would happen if she was a woke woman. And she didn't agree to go up to Bond's hotel room when he asked her to, even though they'd only just met. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, it's, you know,
but it's more than funny. It's amazing and it's so clever. And I also think there's so much truth in it, because I think a lot of people, post Me Too and post Time's Up and post everything you've been doing in the UK, a lot of people feel more empowered to say no and to say, oh, actually, I don't have to do this to get this job, or I don't have to do this to, you know, suck up to James Bond.
Yeah.
And I think it's happening. Like, have you seen the change? Because you were very involved with Time's Up. Have you seen changes since?
I think the big change that I've seen is that there's this amazing camaraderie between women.
Yeah.
So we are going, oh, I've got your back. Whereas before, I felt like, definitely in what I do, my profession, there's been this culture of competition.
Yeah.
It's like there's one part for a woman. There are three female directors. There are, you know.
Yeah.
So you're all fighting for a position. And actually, it shouldn't be like that. If we're not being competitive with one another, if we work together, then we can do whatever we want. And that has been a hugely powerful thing that I've felt personally this year. And then, you know, like practical things. For example, I just worked on a Netflix show, and Netflix are one of the first people that they give harassment training to every single crew member and cast member.
Wow.
Before you start a job, which means that you have to go on a phone call or have a meeting, like a kind of, you know, a lesson in what accounts for harassment. And it goes from, you know, telling an inappropriate joke, which might be funny to you, but it might deeply offend somebody else because you don't know them and you don't know what they've gone through, to, you know, obvious harassment. And that is a really powerful thing, because first of all, it means that harassment is centre, you know, it's just everyone's talking about it and what does it mean? And, oh, actually, and they're questioning their own behaviour or their own sense of humour. And also Netflix put a helpline on the top of every day's call sheet.
Wow.
So if you do feel like that's not appropriate, or I've seen something, I saw that person do something that was inappropriate, you can anonymously call or non-anonymously. Before, a year ago, no one would have even known.
Yeah, and it might have even been ridiculed.
Yeah, and you might have lost your job. You know, but it's this sense of, you know, we're all out there together looking after each other, I feel, is the big thing that's come from it.
I also think that's so clever because I think one of the things that's kind of bandied around post Me Too is like, oh, but what does harassment even mean? And, you know, is can I not talk to women anymore? And, you know, all of this. And something like that, you're very clearly being told at the beginning of a shoot what it is and what constitutes it. And there's lots of things that aren't and there's lots of things that are. And I think the more transparent we can be about that, the easier it is, because then you kind of cut out any of that negative.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's so weird. I can imagine, I mean, not to give too much away, but like, I had my harassment training with two other actors that are comedian actors that I know, you know, British comics, male comics. And I was thinking, oh, no, like, they're going to make loads of jokes on the harassment call saying, oh, what if I, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, it was so incredible because humour is a very, you know, even my sense of humour, I've got a kind of naughty sense of humour, you know.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, I do laugh at things sometimes that are a little bit rude or whatever. And people were saying, oh, God, is it the death of me being able to make jokes? And it's not about that. It's about knowing when it's appropriate, feeling it out before you go there. And just, you know.
And I also say, like, if you've got a joke that offends someone of a minority that's been going down really well, it's probably because you haven't been hanging out with that minority.
Yeah.
And if the joke isn't funny to women or people of colour or someone that's got a disability or a hidden disability, it's just not funny.
Yeah.
So try a bit harder. Like, if it didn't go down well with your male friends, you would cut that joke.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it really is. And it's also people not laughing because they think they should, or laughing because they think if they don't. I think we've all been a bit more empowered to be like, actually, try harder. Like, come up with something that doesn't offend me.
Yeah.
And it might mean we even get funnier jokes.
Yeah, exactly. It might mean we have to dig a little bit deeper and use a bit more brain.
And not just offend people to get laughs. I think humour's a really interesting thing because your piece in the book's really funny. And I was just saying I loved your leading lady parts, which is an amazing sketch that you made recently, kind of about everything that's going on with Time's Up. And do you I think often in the past, and for me especially growing up, I think I thought feminists were like really grumpy and angry and like couldn't take a joke and couldn't flirt with boys and couldn't, you know, wear pink and do the makeup. And I think actually a lot of the feminists I know are the funniest people I know, and there are ways of doing it with humour, but I do think still sometimes it's that idea that it's not funny. Where do you see your comedy coming in with your feminism?
I think that, I mean, I will stand on the soapbox and shout and scream about it, and have done and spoken a lot in the press about my feminist views. But actually, like, to get the message across to, like, the majority, to the masses, to people that maybe are resisting it, humour and comedy is the best way.
Yeah.
Especially with leading lady parts. People were laughing at that wouldn't normally watch something like that, or who maybe don't even agree with Time's Up and, you know, all of those things, or are unsure. And it's the most sort of gentle way to tell your message.
Yeah.
But it's very, very tricky to get right. And because we're in the process at the moment of trying to make another, like, a lead-on film from leading lady parts, and we want it to be funny, but at the same time we want it to be about inequality. So you're kind of thinking, well, you don't want to mock anyone, but and we definitely don't want to be doing any, like, finger pointing. So it actually takes quite a lot of thinking about and being very sensitive. And but if you can get it right, I think it can be the best way of getting a message across.
And I also sometimes think there's this whole, like, untapped bank of female comedy, because we've had stigmas around it maybe to talk about. We organised this whole campaign around periods, and the jokes that came out at our protest of, like, the signs and, you know, people's speeches, and there were just all these period jokes that I've never heard, because I feel like people would have been too embarrassed to tell a period joke before, unless it was, like, coming from a man. So I sometimes think there's actually going to be this amazing wave of comedy inspired by these things, because there are funny things about it, and there are funny things about being feminist, and there are funny things about all of this.
Yeah, there's funny, there's humour everywhere, and wit. I think wit is, that's the right word as well, because it's about being really sharp, and it's not being slapdash about your comedy or your humour. It's about being really clever about it, and it just spins so inspiring, actually, this year, me meeting a lot of, you know, comedians and writers and funny women, and the tricks that they can play on,
yeah,
like taking something that's not funny, that shouldn't be funny, like sexual harassment, and finding a way of, you know, sort of getting it out there in a not palatable way, but, you know,
yeah,
you have to be incredibly smart, really.
No, but I think it's so powerful, and I always say I was really ill as a child, and, you know, some of the times I've laughed most are in hospital, because sometimes those extreme emotions can lead to extreme, like, laughter as well, and comedy. And I think saying that all of feminism has to be very, like, dire and serious is just ignoring, like, a huge part of humans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're not all, you know, it's absolutely not true at all, this outdated idea of, yeah, you know, I think feminism is, you know, a movement, obviously, and sometimes I think the word is a bit outdated because it still has these negative connotations, yeah, to some people because of, you know, previous ideas about feminism and what a feminist is. But actually, you know, it's so much more, you know, it's like, it's about equality, it's about equalistas, we're like calling ourselves, me and my friends, we're equalistas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can be silly and fun and expressive and sexy and gorgeous, and, you know, you can do, yeah, anything. You can be anything.
Exactly. It's the book is really all about these kind of lies that we've been told about what it means to be a feminist, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a man. What do you think is a lie that you feel you were told about what it meant to be a woman, or that you had to do because you're a woman?
I think mine was not be outspoken,
yeah,
and if I had an opinion, you know, to keep it palatable, keep it nice, keep it sweet and short, and no one really wants to hear about your opinion, really.
Yeah,
like, just keep it short. And I was having a conversation with my two really good friends yesterday who are big feminists, and they were saying, God, you know, I'm only recently finding my voice,
yeah,
I'm only recently feeling like it's okay for me to take up space and speak for a long time and not say, I'm sorry, I've been speaking for a long time. Or, you know, as women, we've been told to take up as little space as possible, be on tiny stilettos that take up the minimum amount of pavement.
Completely. And then when,
you know,
it comes about, you're not used to it. Like,
yeah,
I've done a degree in feminism and women's movements, and when people ask me questions about it, I don't know what to say, and I guess because of, you know, Beyonce and my mum, and I don't know, and it's madness, because it's just so crazy that I actually find it easier to write, because, and then sometimes I look at the things I've written and realise I'd never say them out loud, or would never speak them up, because it's scary.
Yeah, it is scary, and you feel vulnerable. And I also think that's because, you know, the media have sort of said, oh God, look at her banging on about this again.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I am banging on about it, actually, because I care about it, and I'll bang on about it until you guys listen, you know.
Yeah.
But we've been, for so many years, it's, you know, made to feel bad about that. And I mean, even when I bang on about, like, feminist issues, I still feel a bit like, oh, you know, someone thinks I'm banging on. You know, I still,
yeah,
feel bad about it, like,
yeah,
that comment. But I think, you know, we have to occupy the space.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's slowly, I'm seeing that happen with my friends and my colleagues. But it's gradual, I think, because it's so deeply ingrained. And maybe it is kind of almost a little bit, maybe a part of, as a woman, you're, you know, oh, I better not, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know, I never know if it's like, it's that natural nature thing.
Yeah. Although I've got friends that are like, rah,
yeah,
and they are women.
And then I know a lot of boys that are like,
yeah,
so silent. Do you think as well a lot of that comes from kind of what you were saying about playing a Bond girl and playing these more sexualized parts and then feeling... I think my dad was once at dinner with someone and he was like, oh, Scarlett keeps talking about this feminist stuff, but what's up with all the pink then? And it was like, you know, feeling like because you care about or have embodied certain ideals that are seen as anti-feminist, that you actually can't speak up on those issues.
Yeah, there is. I think there's some, I did an interview recently where I said something like, they said, well, you do realise that, the journalist said, you do realise that, you know, some people might say, well, you're not really allowed to talk about being, you know, non-sexualized when you were, you know, you were a Bond girl. And I said, okay, yeah, fair enough. Like, you have to own it. So I own that.
Or you're the person that should most because you've been through it.
And yeah, you've maybe.
Done it. And I think also you're saying you can do that and still be a feminist.
Yeah, but it's I have such conflicting ideas, yeah. Like feelings about it all. And I'm still sort of working them out in a weird way. But I then did this film, which is probably my most sexualized role, but it's one of the most feminist films I did, called Byzantium with Saoirse.
Yeah.
And that, in that, I'm way more sexualized than in the Bond film. Yeah. It's like, I'm a stripper, I'm a prostitute, I'm doing all this crazy stuff in, like, you know, stockings and suspenders. But, you know, it's one of the most empowered characters I play as well.
Well, I also think sometimes that critique that women shouldn't be sexualized is also saying that women shouldn't enjoy sex.
Mm.
Or, you know, it's actually as much a part of us. You know, there's a piece that my friends wrote for this book about wanking as a girl, and we just did this whole campaign around female masturbation, and it was incredible to see these women come out and be like, yeah, you know, this is a part of being a woman. And it's funny, that idea that it's like, it's the virgin or the whore thing, isn't it? It's like, you can either be one or the other, and actually there should be a middle ground.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can't also just only be seeing women in film that are like buttoned up to the neck and not doing anything.
Yeah, and I think that's changing as well. You know, we're starting to see, like, I mean, I have a film coming out in a couple of months about Vita and Virginia, Vita Sackville, West Virginia.
I'm so excited about that. I don't know. I did half my degree in Virginia Woolf. Like, I'm obsessed with her.
But it's about this love affair and love story between these two incredible intellects and brilliant women who were at the forefront of feminism, you know, and it's directed by a woman, written by a woman. So all the love scenes are so different to what we usually see with female love scenes. Like, it's so, they're very beautiful, very honest, and kind of like in your face, but not, you know, it's more about feeling rather than about what position they're in or whatever.
Yeah, it's not loads of scissoring.
I
don't think Virginia Woolf knew what scissoring was.
Virginia Woolf would definitely not have been up for that.
No. Do you feel there are lies you've been told about what it means to be an actress as well?
No. To be honest, nothing springs to mind. I mean, the only thing that I wish I'd sort of done when I was younger was question things.
Yeah.
And I didn't really. I just sort of went along with things. And when I meet people like Saoirse or Florence Pugh or, you know, these young actresses, she's not that young anymore, I'm afraid. But when I first met her, she was like 14 or something. But, you know, who are so self-assured and question everything and are so confident to say, hang on a minute, wait, why do I need to do that? And I didn't do that. And I think the only thing that I felt was a lie was when I was at drama school being told, you will not work. They do that because it's a fact. Like, you don't work most of the time. And so therefore, you know, anything you get, take it.
Yeah.
And I now go into drama schools and I say, it's like the same for any professional or any, especially a creative profession. Your only control is in what you decide to do or not do. Mm. And you should take real pride in that and really be very protective over it. And I didn't do that. And so I felt like I was told to be very grateful. And I am very grateful. But I wish I just had a little bit more kind of confidence in myself to go, hang on a minute. Like, I don't have to do that.
I've had that with writing a lot where I left school when I was 14. I was just so grateful to get anything I was asked to do. And some of it is stuff I hate. And when I look back at it, I'm like, oh, God, why did I write that article or something? And I think, it is that thing when you feel... It's that line between ambition and, like, trying to get any work you can get and also just, like, feeling okay saying no and having enough trust in yourself.
Yeah,
that's scary.
And it is trusting yourself and trusting others to not... It's that thing, again, of, like, not feeling threatened, like at threat, like, oh, if I don't do this, then that's it, I'm never going to work again, no one's going to want to work with me, or And I think that's the thing that's sort of, it's a big talking point between my female friends at the moment of, we just have to know that our like jobs are not at risk.
Yeah.
If we just go off for half a year and do something else. And
it's also that thing of not wanting to be seen as difficult, which I think is really tough. I'm really obsessed with that bit in When Harry Met Sally, where she goes, I'm difficult. And any time my mum talks to me about, like, why don't you have a boyfriend? Or, like, why are you like this? I'm like, I'm difficult. But it's hard. Like, we're told not to be difficult. All I ever wanted to be when I was growing up was nice. Like, that was the highest compliment anyone could give me. Mm. It's like, I just hope they think I'm nice. I just hope they think I'm nice. And I'm like, I'm not that nice, and it's fine.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's funny. That was like, none of my brothers would ever have said, like, I just want to be seen as nice. It's like a very kind of fearful thing, I think, as well.
Yeah, to be disliked, yeah. To be difficult.
But what's so amazing is, like, you talking about speaking up, I think I work a lot with teenage girls and young girls, and they are so incredible and so outspoken and feel so empowered to, like, make the things they want to make and do the things they want to do. And so much of that comes from people like you and, like, what you're doing now. And it really does. Like, I think what we've seen in the last year is just incredible. And if you're watching that when you're 14 or 15, that's going to change the whole path of the rest of your life.
Well, that's very sweet. I mean, I wish, when I think back to when I was a teenager, we didn't really have anyone that was sort of, you know, there were people, but I didn't feel like I connected to anyone that I went, wow, they're saying something. No one was talking about weight. No one was talking about pressures. And it was all very hush-hush. No one was talking about, you know, the feminine ideal and beauty and all of that. And I wish that I had someone that was doing that. And even when I first started talking about all that nonsense, and I'd get, you know, it would get in the press, and then it would be their talking point, and then, you know, you sort of think, oh God, oh no, why did I say that? But actually, now everyone talks about it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, oh, you know,
it's boring.
It's boring now. Yeah. No,
now they want to talk about, like, the films.
Yeah. Oh, that would be the ultimate.
Yeah.
God, you actually want to hear about my work?
No, it's so interesting. Who were your heroes growing up?
Bjork.
Yeah.
Was probably the biggest. Alanis Morissette.
See, these were like the few feminist icons.
Yeah.
So you kind of knew even then.
Yeah. Shirley Manson.
Yeah.
And they're all singers, I mean, yeah. It seems. Because I wasn't into films, and I wasn't into, like, I didn't really read books. All I did was listen to music. So I guess they were my, and they, I am really, like, Bjork really did influence me in so many ways, and my sister. And she was just, you know, I mean, obviously she's a massive feminist, but she just felt like she was outside of anything, actually.
Yeah.
She's just doing her own thing, and she didn't care what anyone thought.
She was like, it's like she invented a new gender or something.
Yeah, totally.
It sounds like you've got a really amazing group of female friends. Mm. Is that a big part of your life and your kind of support system?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I'm very, very close to my sister Hannah, and she is my best friend as well as being my sister. So, you know, the relationships that I feel, you know, I feel very relaxed around women. I don't feel kind of, you know, competitive or all of, you know. I remember going to a party once and someone said, oh, I bet you're one of those women that only have male friends. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
Actually, all my friends, like, a lot of my friends are women. And it's really great to, I have loads of male friends too, but, you know, my female friends is when I can really get down to it and really, you know, get to the nitty gritty. And they're so supportive. And now I've been collaborating with some of my best friends on work as well, which is just the most joyful thing ever.
Yeah.
To be able to work with your friends and create something beautiful.
Sometimes I think when you get kind of young girls or even like older women who can maybe think they're not feminist or think they don't really understand what it is, sometimes I just say, like, look at your female friends and how you support them and how they support you. And that is it, but just on a global scale. Like, it's doing that not just for your friends, but for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah, we've all got my female friends of, like, you know, the reason I'm still going. It's, yeah, like, incredible. What advice would you give to a young girl who's maybe, like, seen you talking about Time's Up and thinks she wants to be a feminist but isn't sure or is scared or something like that?
Well, she's already a feminist because she's, you know, questioning things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think you're right. It's, feminism's about togetherness. It's about working together, being together, hearing each other, supporting each other. So don't feel like you're on your own. Like, there are so many forums, there are so many groups, there are so many things that you can do to feel included. Even if you're shy and you don't like hanging out with people, you can still sort of read stuff and feel included. There's so much literature. Should read, like, Virginia Woolf. And, you know, that's a really good place to start. But, yeah, I mean, it is scary. It is. I still feel scared sometimes, like, talking, even doing this podcast. I was like, what am I going to... I'm going to say something that might be really offensive or that might get taken out of context or, you know.
Yeah.
That's a risk when you are kind of stepping outside your comfort zone. But then that's okay as well. It's not the end of the world.
And I think also the thing is, everyone that's engaged in feminism has gotten that, like, criticism or something like that. And the truth is, you either ignore it because it's people that clearly just want to hate you and never are going to agree with you anyway, or it's someone that might be seeing an interesting point and then you can kind of talk to them and learn from it. I think so often we're so scared of engaging with anything because of that moment when the criticism comes. And actually when it comes, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, right. It's criticism is everywhere. And, you know, especially with my job, I mean, I get critiqued. That's basically, like, what happens to me on a daily basis. And it sort of just goes away. I mean, it might leave a mark on you and it might scar you, but it does go away.
Yeah.
It sort of just moves on, it moves on. And you can get through it.
Yeah, it's definitely less bad when it happens than when you're thinking about it and thinking, what are people going to say about me and how are people going to respond to this?
Mm-hmm.
And probably you'll find, like, you have amazing other people that care about exactly the same thing. And
yeah, and
actually, to make friends.
Sometimes it can be, you know, times when I've really, really struggled. And, you know, I went through a time in my career where I felt very, like, you know, unsupported and patronized. And actually, and there were, like, the worst moments in my career and life at the time. But actually, thank God they happened. I actually see them as the kind of, they created the work that I've been now doing is inspired by all of that. So sometimes, you know, I'm grateful for those bad times as well, if you can channel them into something else. And
yeah, completely. I think that's an amazing way to end.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. And thank you for your piece. It's just so incredible. Like, we're obsessed with it. And everything. And everything you do for the world.
Oh, my gosh.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. If you've enjoyed it, or even if you didn't, we'd love to hear from you. So make sure you subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, published by Penguin Random House on the 4th of October 2018, is available to buy now via the link in the description of this episode. All of the royalties from each book sold go to the amazing UN organisation Girl Up, who is supporting girls across the world. For more information and to join our gang, please follow us on Instagram at feminists. Thank you so much to Audio Boom for helping us get it out there, and to the wonderful Pink Feminists who've joined us as guests. If you enjoyed this episode, we have some really fun feminist events coming up with even more of our contributors, and we would love to have you. There's a link to our website where you can buy tickets in the description of this episode, and I cannot wait to see you there. Just explain it.
Yeah.
Femsplain.
Femsplain. Femsplain would be like, I wonder if you've noticed that.
Can I just say, I know it can be nice, but I just think you might have noticed that it wasn't.
You probably already
winter.
Know this, but yeah. Okay.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com